Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 16th chapter. Jesus said, "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen, and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames.' But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus, in like manner, evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from there to us.' He said, 'Then, Father, I beg you to send him to my father's house, for I have 5 brothers, that he may warn them, so that they will not also come into this place of torment.' Abraham replied, 'They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them.' He said, 'No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent.' He said to him, 'If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead.'" The Gospel of the Lord. There are weeks when Sunday morning sermon just seems to flow out of my fingers onto the keyboard without any effort at all, as if I'm not even the one who's writing it. No matter what line of work you're in, you've probably had a week like this where everything is going perfectly. You can do no wrong. The lunch meeting, the overseas project, everything is just clicking and going exactly as it should. And then there are weeks where I sit down at a blank computer screen and think deeply about the fact that I've probably never had anything of value to say out loud ever in my life. You've probably had a week like this as well, where nothing goes right. The simplest task seems to take hours. Those things on your to-do list that were marked as easily accomplished are now looming like Mount Everest off in the distance. You want to guess which kind of week I've had? I don't usually like to make a big deal out of the effort and the work that goes into sermon preparation, because it seems to me like there's no way that I can talk about it without it just sounding like I'm making excuses. And excuses, frankly, have never helped anyone experience the love of Jesus. But this week, it wasn't my schedule or my travel or the 2-month-old that I have at home. No, it was just the story itself. That's where my challenge comes from this week. Because if you were listening to the gospel just a few moments ago, you heard Jesus tell a story that lays out a scathing critique of people with wealth. The story does not begin with a more standard parable type introduction. You know, the kingdom of heaven is like this, or then Jesus told them a parable. That's my personal favorite. Instead, it just kind of launches into this story. It's also the only story that Jesus tells in all 4 Gospels where a character in the story is given a name. For this and other reasons, St. Ambrose, back in the late 300s, said, you know, we really should think of this story more as a narrative than a parable. And this might just sound like semantics, what's really the difference between a narrative and a parable, but it serves to remind us that this story cannot be read in the same way that the other stories of Jesus can be read. Something else is going on here. But the story's uniqueness is also not the heart of its challenge for us. Think about what we learn in the story. The wealthy man ends up in Hades, while Lazarus is in the bosom of Abraham. Is the curse of the wealthy man simply that he had money? We're told in your lifetime you received good things and now you are in agony. Let's not kid ourselves. We've all received good things. I've received good things. I get to eat good foods. I have a home that is safe, a family that loves me, a job that compensates me fairly and gives me time off to spend with my family. Even more than that, I, on a routine basis, find myself passing by the Lazaruses of this world, those who are hungry or sick or covered in sores or who are just lost. And I do so without a second thought. So what does that mean for us, and what does it mean for what is to come? So this morning's sermon is proving to be a challenge because I find myself deeply convicted by the story that Jesus tells. Convicted because it's one of those times where it feels like Jesus is speaking directly into my own life. And maybe you're having that same feeling this morning. I hear this message that Jesus shares and I want to change. I want to do right. And yet, Jesus doesn't seem to offer a solution to the problem. It feels an awful lot like Jesus is saying, well, if you've got good things in this life, you've got agony in the next, and there's nothing that you can do about it. And friends, that makes me uncomfortable. Frankly, it should probably make all of us a little uncomfortable. It may even be fair to assume that it's Jesus' intent to have us squirming in our seats as we hear a story like this one, a story that is so obviously intended to convey the dangers of wealth. And so even as I contemplated this sermon throughout the week, I found myself asking, pleading even, God, what then am I supposed to do? Because the end of the story does not offer hope. The story ends with the rich man still in torment, and Abraham saying that they won't change even if someone rises from the dead. Now I want us to take a moment and sit with this discomfort. See, too often, I think we jump to the answer, or we jump to the hope, or to the grace. But for the moment, just sit with this reality. The reality that most of us, especially if we compare ourselves to the global population, most of us are wealthy. We are this rich man in the story, and thus should be very aware that Jesus is speaking to us. Taking just a few moments to let ourselves feel uncomfortable will not, I promise, bring down the entire structure around us. But it will give us a chance to reflect. And when we take that opportunity to reflect and look at what Jesus might be saying to us, there are a few things I think we would do well to remember. The first is the setting of this story that comes after these three stories that Luke had told in chapter 15. See, back in chapter 15, you might remember this from a few Sundays ago. We heard these three incredible stories about God being like the woman who turns over everything in her house to find the coin, or the shepherd who leaves his flock to find the one lost sheep. These incredible stories set up for us Luke's whole purpose, that this gift of grace is something that we can never earn or deserve, because God's grace is a function of God's love for us, not our worthiness to be loved. But if these stories stand on their own, we run the risk of coming to believe that, well, we've got God's grace, and so now I can do whatever I want, because God will always find me and bring me back. Of course, we know that's not the purpose of the gift. It's not the purpose of Luke's gospel. And so this morning, we follow this up in chapter 16, where Luke gives us two more stories, the story we heard last week and then this morning's story of the rich man and Lazarus. On its own, this story is perilous at best for anyone with any sense of wealth. Read in the context of Jesus' teaching in Luke chapter 15 and 16 combined, we understand that the foundation of grace is already ours. And therefore, this story need not be one that leads only to condemnation, but can instead be a guide for how to respond to the gift of grace. And so faced with this reality that grace is already ours and that we are called to respond to that gift, our focus can then turn to a new phrase a few verses before our reading picked up this morning. In verse 14 of Luke chapter 16, we heard that the Pharisees were described as lovers of money. The Pharisees who were lovers of money. This is the audience to whom Jesus tells this parable. And in this context, we might understand and become aware that the rich man then should represent someone who is a lover of money. And if we were paying extra close attention and really want brownie points this morning, we might even turn our ears towards our reading from Timothy, where we heard a similar phrase, that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. This is a verse that is tragically misquoted in my estimation. We often hear it as money is the root of all kinds of evil, and that's simply not true. Dave Ramsey in his course, Financial Peace University, will remind us that money itself is neutral. I can hold up a $20 bill, and I can use that $20 to feed the hungry or clothe the naked, or I can use that $20 to cause pain and suffering in my neighbor. Money is not the problem. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. This is our concern. But let's not let ourselves off the hook of feeling uncomfortable just yet, because it's easy for us to think, well, I don't love money. But we might be too quick to jump to that conclusion. Because let's think about what it means to love someone or to love something. It means we're willing to put their needs before our own. It means we're going to defend them even when it might seem dangerous or cost us something of our own. When we love someone or something, we are going to put them before everything else. And so in our place today, love of money means that money, or rather our desire for money, is put before the needs and the desires of God. For the rich man, his love of money prevented him from caring for his neighbor that was right at his doorsteps. Perhaps our own love of money causes us to, or prevents us from doing the same thing. Or maybe it's our love of money that stops us from following God's call into a new challenge in life. Or maybe it's our love of money that keeps us from doing the thing that we know is right for fear of it costing us our job. You see how this works? Money is not the problem. But Jesus wants us to understand that with wealth, with money, comes this trap that we are all too easily lured into of putting our own comfort and our own security before the will of God. And to be honest with you, I don't think we have to look too far or too hard to find places in our own lives where we have all done just that, where we have all put our own desire for comfort and security before the will of God. So then where are we? If we now understand that the foundation of this story is grace, and that the story is not condemnation, but encouragement to respond to that gift, and if we now understand that the love of money is ultimately means that we put our own comfort before the desires and will of God, well, can we stop feeling uncomfortable yet? Can we just get to the good news? Can we at least get to the part of the story where Jesus tells us what to do to make ourselves feel better? I wish that I could say yes. I wish that this was a week where I could end on a note that leaves us all feeling encouraged and humming a joyful tune as we walk from this place. But this isn't that kind of reading. The reason we are uncomfortable this morning, and when I say we, please know that I include myself in this, the reason we are uncomfortable is because we know, deep in our bones, we know that we have not responded to the gift the way God intended us to. And so while we might come this morning asking, well, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to live differently? The fact of the matter remains for us that we have Moses and the prophets. Just like the brothers of the rich man, we know what we're supposed to do. We might not have a clearly lined out spending plan for the next month that God ordains each month and says, this is how you will spend your money, but we know God's heart. A heart that cares for the Lazaruses that lay at our doorstep. The path has already been laid out for us. And Jesus rose from the dead to make sure that we would find it. God loves each of you, and I do too.